Well, back in 1937, Wisconsin's Soil Conservation District was enacted into state law. Most of Wisconsin's counties formed conservation districts through the 40s and the 50s. And policymakers wanted to improve the capability of county government to administer conservation programs. So back in 1982, authority was transferred to some newly created land conservation committees. And these LCCs are a pretty potent force for conservation because the committees are part of the county board and they do possess legislative authority. We're going to be talking today about county land and water conservation programs in the state today with a couple of guests. Kurt Calkins is with me in the studio from Portage, Wisconsin. He's director of the Columbia County Land and Water Conservation Department. And Kurt, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Mary Jo Gingras is the county the county conservationist at the Iron County Land and Water Conservation Department in Hurley, Wisconsin. Mary Jo's with us by phone. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi, Larry. Thank you.
Thanks very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it very much. In creating the legislation for soil and water conservation, the legislature took a look at our soil resources in the state where they're being depleted by erosion. Waters, we've got some non-point and point sources of pollution there. And the state found further that the policy should be to halt and reverse the depletion of the state's soil resources and the pollution of its waters. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how the legislature implemented this policy. Kurt, I'll turn to you first.
Well, sure. If you look back historically, and you did a good introduction of as far as how county land and water conservation departments have come to be today, throughout from 1982 till the present, county land and water conservation departments have been charged with Chapter 92 is the state statute that, from an administrative standpoint, we look at. And we've been charged with using a multitude of different programs to target protection of the soil and water resources in the state of Wisconsin. T by 2000 tends to be a catchphrase in our in our world. T is a tolerable soil loss, and as we know, soil is a very important entity for our survival as a species, but not and but I'll say economically for in agriculture. And then there's a connection between soil and water pollution. We have used the numerous programs. People, listeners might be in tune with as they're driving down the road. Think about the days when the mullboard plow was very common, and today it's very atypical to see a mullboard plow. We've moved away from fall tillage in general. In a lot of parts of the state, you see more trash on the fields, more less intrusive tillage, and that's all helped us move towards our soil retention goals.
What is Mary Jo? Do you know the loss per acre of soil in the state, the average?
Oh, geez, I'm not even sure about that right now.
Kurt might have some idea. At one time, I knew it was something like 9 tons of topsoil per acre per year, something like that.
Yeah. And I just asked one of my staff before I left, and in Columbia County, our average tolerable soil loss is 5 tons per acre per year. And to give you a sense of what that means, if you can think of an acre, 210 feet by 210 feet, it's about a dime thickness across that landscape.
Yeah, I think you can put a ton of topsoil in a pretty good-sized bathtub, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's that's a lot of weight when you come to doing some work around your lawn and take a look at a dump truck full of soil that you're moving around. You're moving around of quite a few tons of soil.
Right.
Well, tell us about your program. Mary Jo, maybe you could talk about what you do as the county conservationist in Iron County.
Well, every county varies a little bit across the state. Basically, what we do is we work with our land conservation committees to develop what's called a land and water resource management plan. This resource management plan is what really drives the department, drives the focus of the department. That plan is developed by private citizens, agency staff, concerned citizens through a period or a process of public meetings, and we develop goals and activities that we will implement through the next 5 years of that planning process. So every county is a little bit different in the sense of what their focus is, and these priorities are driven from the grassroots level up to the local level within each county. those local citizens help to develop that management plan, and then that's basically the vehicle that drives the activities of that department. A number of the land and water conservation departments across the state, we focus on anything from environmental education outreach on various topics, including groundwater education and monitoring of groundwater. A lot of departments do well water testing, aquatic invasive species education, grant writing, grant facilitating. We do work on stormwater education and urban runoff, resource planning. We do a number of school programs. There are a couple of conservation camps across the state, and a number of departments also implement native plant sales on an annual basis. But the main activity through all of these departments is implementation of conservation practices on the ground with private landowners.
Yeah. Kurt, something to add to that?
No, I think Mary Jo did a good job. I mean, it is the one thing I'll, it is interesting to point out is as you look across the landscape of Wisconsin, it is a very diverse challenge in the natural resources world from, say, the borders of the Illinois border all the way up to Lake Superior.
A lot of difference in soil, for sure, and water.
Right. Yeah, and I guess the main thing is all the counties in Wisconsin, all 72 counties, have a land and water conservation department available to the public. These departments primarily address soil erosion and runoff. We do that through providing cost-sharing opportunities to implement a conservation practice. We provide technical assistance and education opportunities to conserve the soil and water resources in the state. And no matter where you live on the landscape in Wisconsin, whether it's city, rural, or shoreland, we have a conservation practice that we could work with landowners on.
I haven't given the phone number yet, so maybe I should do that. The number to call, if you'd like to join in, have a question about the programs, the County Land and Water Conservation Programs, how they may affect you, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And I'll comment again that our had a little computer problem with one of our computers, so the emails we can't get today like we normally do. But you got the phone, so call us, 1-800-642-1234. I'm wondering about the powers that the County Land and Water Conservation Boards and departments have. And, Kurt, can you comment on that?
Sure. Wisconsin is very unique in the sense that we migrated from a soil and water conservation district model, which is pretty common throughout the United States, to a county-based model. And one of the great the strengths in that is it provides legislative authority at the local level. Most county land conservation departments have some ordinance implementation in their programming. A lot of that focuses on animal waste management, but it's migrated into other realms. That's a very important component. Mm-hmm. Traditionally we're implementing federal law down to state law, down to the local level, and trying to come up with mechanisms to implement it. One of the other things is without a doubt, is the ability to use the ability to raise funds locally.
Yes.
That's a very important venue. That I think some of the soil and water conservation districts across the state of the nation struggle with.
Right. Yeah, basically Wisconsin is one of the only states that have the system based on land conservation committees as opposed to the conservation districts. We all share the same type of mission, though, and that's coordinating assistance from available sources to implement natural resource-based concerns.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Dwight in Beloit now. Dwight, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning. Well, almost afternoon.
Yeah.
Anyone who lives in this area knows we had serious flooding from the Rock River.
Right.
But I don't see any abatement in the zealousness that our local and state politicians and government officials have for what they call growth. We had a development here in Beloit not too long ago where they cleared out a heavily forested area right on the shoreline. It was such a bad idea that the DNR finally stepped in and said they couldn't put basements in some of these homes, which must be unheard of situation, and that's because of the proximity of the rock. I wonder what we need to do maybe there's legislation, or I'm not sure what the problem is. We have one thing happening, and we're talking, you know, we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get some comments. Kurt, I'll turn to you first.
Well, the question of flooding, obviously, in 2008 in Columbia County, we experienced much of what southern Wisconsin did. And where flooding meets conservation, that's always a challenge. When you're looking at the types of projects and practices we deal with, and then you get into the flooding spectrum, it is a different situation. I think that the caller's question is very valid. I mean, much of the work that many land conservation departments do in the realm of stormwater management, floodplain management, those types of things, a lot of the challenges are it's a balancing act. I guess it goes along with the word conservation of the public's needs, wants, desires versus what's politically and socially acceptable for standards. That plays a lot into it. There are probably many instances where I, in my personal situation, might think we need to do something stronger, but politically, socially, we don't really have the mechanism to do that. So the flooding is it's a challenge, and I think the biggest thing that people can do is begin to ask the questions like the caller did and start saying, you know, maybe we should be rethinking some of this a little bit. We know that things are changing. Storm events are getting more concentrated, and runoff is going to be increasing. So.
Yeah. Mary Jo, anything to add there?
Yeah. The other thing is, in Wisconsin, we do have some statewide laws that have been enacted into legislation from the Department of Natural Resources as far as maintaining a shoreline buffer, which would be native trees and shrubs, grasses, and wildflowers that extend 35 feet inland from a stream, river, or a lake. And we are required to maintain that along all properties in Wisconsin, with the exception of a 30-foot wide viewing or access corridor that could be clear-cut if you wish down to the lake. We recommend only editing those areas. So it is really important to maintain these buffer strips.
Mm-hmm. And I want to have you comment some more on that, but we need to take a quick break here. We'll be back with our two guests in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about county land and water conservation programs in Wisconsin and how they affect you and me. Our two guests today, Kurt Calkins of Portage, director of the Columbia County Land and Water Conservation Department. Mary Jo Gingras is county conservationist at the Iron County Land and Water Conservation Department in Hurley, Wisconsin. So really pleased to have them with us, Mary Jo with us by phone today. If you have a question or a comment, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call and we'll get you on the air. And Mary Jo, to go back to you for a bit. As we talk about shoreland and the requirements about what needs to be along our shoreline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're fortunate in Wisconsin in the sense that we do have some statewide legislation out there that helps to protect our shoreland areas, protecting water quality and providing soil erosion control. In Wisconsin, our statewide regulations are we maintain a 35-foot buffer, shoreline buffer, along the edge of our waterways or greater. Counties have the opportunity of increasing that distance back from the water's edge, which there are a few counties in the state that are more restrictive, providing for greater water quality benefits. And basically what we do is we maintain that buffer 35 feet inland from the water's edge with native vegetation, including trees, shrubs, grasses, and ground cover species.
Okay, so there you have it. Let's go to Judy in Waukesha. Judy, hello to you.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I live on the old homestead, and there's a pond there that's been there for about 55 years. And I'm working, I made one brief phone call to the DNR. I have a pond specialist involved, and they said, you know, just send in your specifications and we can talk. And she said also give your description from the survey and also from your taxes that you pay so that we can determine whether it's public or private land or public or private, period. And then she said public, then we would be in charge of telling you what to do. Is that true? I mean, how can the DNR be in charge of land that's already owned, taxes are paid, and tell us what to do about a small pond that I'm just trying to clean up.
You're trying to clean the pond up. Okay, well, Kurt, I'll turn to you first.
Well, sure. The reference that you're getting from the Department of Natural Resources in reference to Chapter 30 and the navigability laws in this state, and kind of it connects into the public trust doctrine, and they're charged with protecting the waters of the state. And it's a gray area that comes up a lot in departments like ours. I've been involved historically in man-made conveyances through subdivisions that have, 5, 10, 15 years later then have been determined to be navigable and under jurisdiction of Chapter 30. So that's really what they're getting at. The best advice I can give you is to work with the Department of Natural Resources folks. I think you mentioned you're in Waukesha County. You might, if you haven't already, talk to the Land and Water Conservation Department there and see if perhaps they can assist you in some form or fashion. The real thing is going to be to get a historical reference to that water body.
Okay. And Mary Jo, anything to add?
No, that's excellent.
Okay. So there you have it. So how would she, how do you find out about where your conservation district office is located?
Well, I have in-house here with me, I have a directory of all the 72 county land conservation departments. But the easiest thing I can tell you is the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection website maintains a directory of all land and water conservation departments because of our close connected partnership with Department of Ag. So if you Google Department of Ag, Wisconsin, and go down there, you can go right to land conservation directory and then search by county. And it's updated on a pretty annual basis.
Okay. So there you have it, Judy. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll turn to Valerie in Green Bay next. And just a reminder, call in with your questions, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And here's Valerie in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious. I know management-intensive grazing is a dairy farming practice that it's really good for conservation, like minimizing erosion and manure problems. And I guess I'm just curious why, as an agency, I don't hear more about land conservation departments really, maybe not so much embracing, but just trying to help move farmers toward that practice as an alternative way to do some good land management.
Okay. Let's turn to Mary Jo. Do you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. It's twofold there. One part about that is, we're still kind of new on the landscape in the sense of a lot of the public doesn't even realize that these land and water conservation departments exist. So building the capacity there to get public outreach to people. The other thing is it's all voluntary-based programs. These programs are available as landowners come forward and request assistance for soil and conservation issues. So we're not out on the landscape doing enforcement or regulatory, as you would see from some of the other departments. It's based on voluntary landowners coming forward and requesting assistance.
Okay. And anything to add to that, Kurt?
Sure. I can, the grazing spectrum is, the caller is exactly right. It's a huge tool in our toolbox, per se, to deal with many of the challenges out there. Not every livestock entity is going to get large and grow and get bigger in that sense. And there are some definite cost-effective savings for landowners through that. In-house in Columbia County, I've been there a little over 9 years now, and we reacted through our planning process because of the interest from landowners in having more ability to deal with grazers. And there are several programs, and depending on which county you're from, again, talk to your land conservation department and express the interest in having the technical expertise available to them. There's several different grant funding sources that help county land conservation departments offset the cost of having staff trained and available for people. And then there are some larger cooperative efforts with UW Extension. But I think you're right. The one problem is it's not for everybody.
Right.
And that's one of the challenges.
Yeah. We, up here in northern Wisconsin, what we do is work very closely with our Natural Resource Conservation Service, NRCS, who implements the rotational grazing program. So so they are able to provide some of that technical assistance to our landowners.
Hmm. Thanks, Val. Appreciate your call. Douglas in Tripoli, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. To your panelists, if anyone's got an idea, I've got shoreline that I like to keep as wild as possible, and most of it is extremely wild, except for the part right in front of my house, a 40-foot swath or so, maybe 50. But every year the ice berms up the earth in front of my property. Is there any way to prevent that, or is there anything I can do about that?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary Jo.
Yeah, some of the best ways are to reduce some of the ice buildup. If you're able to maintain trees and shrubs or deep-rooted structures there, that would actually help hold that soil in place. The other thing would be if you can encourage aquatic plants, native aquatic plant growth, such as burr reeds or rushes. Do you have any aquatic plants out in front of that area right now?
A lot that are below the water line, and then it is also, the ice has been so strong it's actually killed a group of birch trees and a willow tree.
Wow.
Yeah, birch trees are actually a pretty short-lived species, too. So once they kind of get to their end point after 40 to 45 years, they start dying off altogether. So it's really important to try and encourage regeneration of other trees and shrubs in that area to maintain structure in that soil base.
Mm, okay. And Kurt, anything?
I have a fair amount of experience historically working on Lake Winnebago and dealing with those types of ice-related damages on shorelines. And really, you know, a lot of the work that Mary Jo and a lot of the other northern counties really do is really focused on a lot of the native restoration, which obviously is all very beneficial in what we're working towards. There are situations, though, when you're dealing with ice that, in my experience, sometimes you do have to look at a combination of native and some more armoring type approaches, mm-hmm. the traditional rock mm-hmm. and other things like that. So, again, I would advise the caller to reach out to your local land conservation department. We have a lot of experience and a lot of networking to be able to stretch across county lines and garner knowledge from each other.
And I would think that there'd be some issues depending on the county in terms of what you call armor rocking
right.
and that sort of thing that would vary quite a bit from one county to the next.
Correct.
Yeah, it really depends on the site, on the size of the lake, the distance of open water coming across that lake, the substrate conditions. There's a number of factors to take into consideration when planning the design for erosion control like that.
Oh, okay. There you have it, Doug. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. So get a hold of your local conservation, soil and water conservation district office and see what they can do to help you out. Dan in Portage, it's your turn now. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. Afternoon, I guess. We touched on earlier stormwater runoff and for controlling flooding. And
yes.
It just seems like there's no efforts made anywhere. As far as, I mean, it seems like there's several simple solutions. I mean, I look along the interstate. Everything along the interstate is designed to run off
exactly.
very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's all, there's concrete aprons. Everything runs into culverts. And there's large areas, you know, sometimes between the lanes that they could use as retention ponds and that type of thing. And it just seems like there's no effort made to control a lot of that runoff.
Right.
And another place I thought of is, I know, Kirby, you probably know where Cardinal Glass is. They've got
sure.
a huge, I don't know, is that at 1 acre retention pond, maybe two?
Sure, yep.
Last year in those storms, there was no more than a foot of water in there. I drive by it every day. Mm-hmm. And then there's a 10-inch culvert that runs down to the river that's maybe a foot or two above grade in the bottom of that pond.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think that that pond could hold an incredible amount of water, but it never does. And I don't know, you know, and I've seen different places like that where retention ponds are built, and they put a drain in the bottom of it. So you can only get a foot or two, maybe a third of the way full of water before it starts to drain out. It seems kind of ridiculous to build this huge retention pond
yeah.
and then put a drain in the bottom of it.
Yeah. Well, interesting points here. I want to get Kurt. I'll start with you, and then Mary Jo will have you
sure.
chime in.
Well, Dan, you're exactly correct. I mean, we have a lot more to do on the landscape as far as the relationship between stormwater. Historically, oftentimes we looked at stormwater. There's two ways to look at stormwater. There's quantity and quality. The quantity perspective you're getting at, even in some of the standards that exist right now with developments and expansion, we're challenged with the design thresholds. There's also challenges with implementation from because things vary between municipalities, and then you get in and things cross into Department of Transportation might have a little different approach and a little different standard than some other things. But in the general sense, you'll hear us always talk about impervious areas. Simple things that we can start to begin to make assessments on is, you know, we have a lot of concrete, we have a lot of impervious areas, and as we continue to grow our society, we're going to have more and more of those. And all those add up during these big rain events, and that's when we end up with serious problems. So little things like rain gutters, thinking about the old rain barrel, the old cisterns mm-hmm. from years ago. If you remember, Grandma and Grandpa had cisterns. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a reason for that. All those types of things are important. There are probably a few, maybe the one like Dan mentioned, there are probably some detention approaches or retention approaches that just kind of get done because the rules say they have to, but there might not really be a lot of applicability to it, and that can be a challenge.
No. Mary Jo, comment?
Sure. Yeah, a couple different things. Traditionally, what we do in more urban areas and subdevelopments is water is typically always graded away from the house directly to that curb and gutter system. So just different approaches of doing things. I know there are some communities across the country now that don't even have curb and gutters. Their roads through residential areas are peaked in the center of the road so that the water flows off to the sides. And then there's actual individual rain gardens along these sides of the roads that will collect and infiltrate that water into the ground. Basically, the main kind of theme to think about is slow it down or slow the flow. And Kurt mentioned a number of the different practices that you could utilize to do that, but the main thing is to promote infiltration into the ground right on site, whether it's along parking lots, private individual homeowner lots, keeping that water on site and encouraging infiltration back into the ground.
Or Interstate 90.
Yeah, you know, it's getting away from some of those curb and gutters and getting either a retention pond or rain garden basins to encourage that infiltration.
Yeah.
I guess that's, you know, that was my thought, was that you could have more infiltration. But I look, mm-hmm. you know, there's large-scale things. You could have hundreds of houses do it individually, mm-hmm. and it still wouldn't add up to anything that on a large scale, like an interstate system or a, you know, something on that
scale.
Plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like you mentioned, the divider basins in between those interstate lanes, you know, those areas a lot of time are grassed ways and they could be utilized. You know, it's going to take some innovation and some thought process, education, kind of thinking about things a little bit differently than how we've traditionally done design.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You've got those that piece of land in between that there'd be no reason why it couldn't just go in there, mm-hmm. or at least some of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Dan, thanks. Good points. Appreciate it. Ann in Cumberland, your question. Hi.
Hi. Currently on our lakeshore, we have about an 18-inch high retaining wall that's railroad ties, and behind that for about 6 feet is some sand. And we're looking to replace the railroad ties with, like, large rock. And we're wondering if we can do that, or when I read the regulations, it doesn't sound like we need to get a permit to do that. And I'm also wondering if we can add sand to the existing sand down at the lake.
Right. Okay. I could take that question.
Okay, Mary Jo.
First question, in Wisconsin, yes, you do need a permit. Kurt had referenced the public trust doctrine before, and in Wisconsin, our waterways are regulated by the Department of Natural Resources and Protection for All People of the state. So anything that happens below the ordinary high water mark on the lake does require a permit from the Department of Natural Resources, which you would need to remove your railroad ties and or place rock. Also, many counties on land do require zoning ordinance permits to do something, so you would have to check with your local zoning department as well. And as far as the rock placement, we do a lot of this work up in Iron County where we have fluctuating water levels on our flowages. There's a lot of old railroad tie seawalls, just like you described, that have been removed. And we do have to go through a number of calculations to look at the soil substrate, the distance of open water across that lake. That actually gives us a calculation to tell us if we even can get a permit to put rock there. If we do get a site permitted to put rock, we still do have the landowner restore that 35-foot buffer adjacent to their rock wall now in order to encourage habitat, fish and wildlife habitat, and soil erosion control. In Wisconsin, as far as replacing some of that soil base, wherever the shoreline has moved back to, we are not allowed to replace any sand bed there.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for calling. Don in Ladysmith, your turn now. Hi, Don.
Good morning, good afternoon, thank you very much.
Sure.
I have a question regarding the 35-foot setback, which I think is fantastic. But I've noticed over the years, especially South Ladysmith here on the Flambeau River, that developers and private owners are just cutting everything right down to the shoreline. And the state has passed that law, but who's out there enforcing it?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, too. Kurt, who's out there?
Well, I assume that might work its way into the discussion eventually as we talk about shoreline. One of the challenges with the shoreline zoning laws is that they were passed as a state law. Local units of government, counties were required to adopt them. But you're right, enforcement and how things are detailed at that level vary. They vary a lot. And then when you get into the idea of municipalities, cities, villages, many of those rules that apply in the undeveloped, unincorporated areas in the counties don't always apply in the cities and villages. I guess what my advice is that, again, information, education, be supportive to people that you're in contact with, that you support these types of initiatives and you'd like to see further further the abilities of the local units of government to see value in following through with those.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mary Jo.
Public pressure can have a big influence on elected officials. That's kind of my big slogan here. In our county, we do have some concerns with this as well. Developers that have been cutting shorelines, and what it comes down to is enforcement from the local zoning department. There are a few cases, depending on the size of area that's been cut, over 10,000 square feet, where the DNR would actually get involved. But typically, it is the local county zoning department. And if they are not enforcing it, then what I usually tell my lake owners is put some pressure on them. Get the lake association involved or get landowners involved to kind of lobby at those elected officials. You know, it's a resource that you care about that we all need in Wisconsin, and it's our responsibility to make sure that that happens.
All right.
The problem that we've had here is that our zoning administrators are doing a great job, and they're writing citations up and things like that. But corporate council never follows up with them, and as a result, a lot of these things just go by the wayside.
Yeah. Unfortunate. I don't know if we have any other answers than what we've already given, Mary Jo.
Be a thorn in their side.
Well, again, for people, how do people find out about their local district and local county land and water conservation department? Where do you go to find that information on how to contact people?
Go to the Department of Ag website, Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, and you'll find a link on there for land conservation department directories, and you can scroll right down there and all 72 counties are listed and contact information. Otherwise, in today's modern age, a Google search of a county land conservation department would likely get you to their website also.
All right.
Most of the departments are housed in the courthouses, too, within each county.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today to talk about the programs and what's going on and to answer questions from our listeners. I really appreciate it. Thank you both very much. Kurt Calkins of Portage, Director of the Columbia County Land and Water Conservation Department. Thank you very much, Kurt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Mary Jo Gingras, County Conservation conservationist at the Harrod County Land and Water Conservation Department in Early, Wisconsin. Mary Jo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And thank you for listening. Just to let you know, coming up tomorrow, we'll talk home remodeling and repair issues. Ken Adams of Madison, John Freiberger of Fitchburg will be our guests. They've been regulars for a long time, and they'll be back once again. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.